the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to College Football Country. I am Josh Parcell, the founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. Don't forget to check out the website, CFBCountry.com, the voice of college football fans every week for the latest and greatest in college football. Took a week off, had a bachelor party to get to. It was with Rossi Three Stacks. We'll talk to him in just a few minutes. We'll recap the bachelor party. We were on a boat. We didn't buy the boat, but we were at least on the boat close enough. And we will, of course, get his picks for I Aim to Tease, as we do every single week. First off, I will be joined by Alex Weaver. She's filling in for Kyle Bailey this week on the All-ACC edition of the pod. I'll talk about Clemson and why an undefeated Clemson might not make the college football playoff. They probably will, but I'll lay out a scenario in which it might not happen. And then we'll talk Virginia Tech and Notre Dame as well, the fallout from the Hokies' loss in Blacksburg on Saturday night. So once again, don't forget, you guys have been doing an awesome job so far. I've been so pleasantly thrilled and surprised with the submissions you guys have given me on the reviews. When you go rate and review the podcast on Apple, you want to leave your name. And when you do so, I need it to be your favorite college football player of all time, or just the most amazing, most obscure, random, incredible name of any college football player in the history of the sport. And some of the guys that we've been getting, of course, I mentioned last week, it's been, you know, Jair Cheeseman. We also had a Chris Gamble submission, Rhett Bomar. I really like the Rhett Bomar submission. There's been some really, really good ones. And I'm scrolling here trying to find a few more. We had Xavier Adibi, great name. I know we got a lot of Hokies who listen to the podcast. CJ Spiller, great Clemson running back for a while, of course. So you guys are killing it. Rocky Boyman. Rocky Boyman might be the leader. I'm looking at you right now. Rocky Boyman is fantastic. So send a review on Apple. When I get to 150 reviews, which we're about 30 away right now, when I get to 150, I will give a $25 Amazon gift card to one of the listeners. And if it was you who submitted that name, you will win the gift card. So thank you guys again so much for listening. Alex Weaver, Rossi Three Stacks today. Visit the website, cfbcountry.com. Download, rate, and review the podcast wherever podcasts can be found. Thank you guys so much. Let's get to Alex. And now welcome on Alex Weaver to the podcast. Alex was a regular last season doing the show every week on WFNZ. She's back for more this year, taking Kyle Bailey's spot this weekend. And Alex, I missed you.
I missed you. Thanks for having me back.
We've been trying to get you in here for now 3 or 4 weeks. It finally happened.
I'm just the weird football passionate person over across from you that makes you look semi-normal. Because you're just as passionate about football as I am.
Well, I know. We've always said that you are me in girl form. Man. So hopefully, don't make me look too bad today. All right, so we're going to get right into the show. And if you don't know, Alex, Clemson grad, Clemson diehard. I wanted to start with my Hokies. We'll save that for the second segment. We're going to talk about Clemson now. And Alex, I know you haven't had a chance to defend your Tigers the last few weeks.
I haven't.
And I know that you texted me.
I have been listening. Oh, okay. I muted you on Twitter for one of the games.
Did you really?
I did.
You told me you were close.
No, it was a mute and then scroll for a little bit, and then I unmuted you. But the original mute happened.
I'm assuming this was during the Syracuse game.
It was.
Yeah. So I wasn't very impressed with the Tigers.
That's
in
fine.
That game. And I don't know many people who were. But now they, of course, last week win 63-3 against Wake Forest. They get
dominate.
Back on track. Dominant game. Okay. Against a 3-3 Wake Forest team. Just want to put that out there. Okay. But I'll say this. Most complete performance Clemson has played so far this season.
Agree with you.
And I said for the last few weeks, I've been saying, I just want to see Clemson play up to its potential just once. Let's just see the Clemson we thought we were going to see before the season. We wanted to see a dominant defense. We wanted to see Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, all the pieces together. And this was the first time in 6 weeks that we've seen it happen. Now, here's the thing for Clemson that I want to get into right out of the gate. Clemson's probably going to run the table. If they don't go undefeated, it's a massive upset, which has happened in the last few years. But looking at that schedule, what they have out in front of them, NC State is by far the toughest game they have left. Depending on what happens in the Coastal, probably Miami or Virginia Tech here in Charlotte in early December. If Clemson goes undefeated, I know I've been saying that for a while, if they lose one game, they're probably out of the playoff. I'm envisioning, Alex, and hold your breath here. There is a nightmare scenario for the College Football Playoff Committee where I think Clemson might get left out. And I think that ultimately, let me preface this by saying, I think if they go undefeated, they're going to get in. But I think there's a scenario where they could have, at the end of the season, as an undefeated team, the fifth best resume, at best, the fifth best resume in college football. Here's the scenario, Alex, and I want you to tell me what you think. Let's say Georgia goes undefeated, 13-0, runs the table, wins the SEC championship game, beats Alabama. The world-beating Alabama.
Hell has frozen over.
Alabama loses, goes 12-1, okay? Now, you have an undefeated Ohio State, okay, 13-0 Ohio State. They're unbeaten right now. They run the table, win the Big Ten. You then have Notre Dame, which looks right now like the most likely team outside of Clemson to go undefeated. They go 12-0. They don't have a ranked team left on their schedule, so the Irish are undefeated. So you have Georgia, Ohio State, and Notre Dame all unbeaten. That realistically leaves one more spot, if you want to say all three of those teams are in, to the college football playoff. Now, with that fourth spot, you have a 12-1 Big 12 champion. Honestly, I don't care who it is. It could be Oklahoma. It could be West Virginia. It could be Texas. One of those teams comes out of the Big 12 with only one loss. Now, that may not happen because Oklahoma and Texas, of course, already have one. So they would both have to – one of the two would have to run the table for them to have one loss and win the conference. But then also, you have a one-loss Pac-12 champion in Washington. Okay? And an undefeated Clemson. I think for sure, of course, Georgia's going to get in.
Where did Alabama go? Is there only loss to Georgia?
Alabama's 12-1.
Okay.
Alabama's 12-1.
Okay.
So Georgia's undefeated. In. Period. No questions asked.
Right.
They're
yeah.
in. Ohio State undefeated. In. No questions
right.
asked. They're in. I said Notre Dame is the third, but among these teams, who are the third and fourth best resumes in this situation? Because Notre Dame would have wins over Michigan, Stanford, Virginia Tech, and USC. Now, it gets interesting for Notre Dame because I actually think their resume is going to get worse as the season unfolds. Like, that Stanford win looked a lot better at the time than it does now. Stanford lost in a blowout to Utah just this past week. There's a real chance Stanford goes 8-4 or worse, and all of a sudden that win doesn't really prop them up. Virginia Tech, not a great win right now. Virginia Tech outside the top 25. Of course, the loss to Old Dominion. Like, people, I think, look at that win on the road in Blacksburg and want to say that that was a high-quality win for Notre Dame. It wasn't, okay? It depends on what the Hokies do the rest of the season. If they end up winning the ACC Coastal, different story. We'll get to that in a second. But Notre Dame would have a couple quality wins. At least that Michigan win may be better than anything Clemson, but I think Notre Dame and Clemson are pretty comparable. You talk about a 12-1 Alabama, which is the world's greatest team. The world's greatest team. If they all of a sudden are an at-large because they lost to Georgia, well, I don't think it's likely. It's certainly possible. You really think they're going to leave out 12-1 Alabama?
I don't think the playoff committee or anybody having anything to do with any sports league is ever going to leave out Alabama from anything.
Okay, so then why don't we just go ahead and say Alabama's in? So we're going to say Georgia, Ohio State, and Alabama as an at-large, 12-1 Alabama is in. I tend to agree with you that I think Alabama would get in. Now the committee would have to decide, is it 13-0 Clemson, whose best wins would be against NC State and best case an 11-2 Miami team? I mean, best case? I don't know if that's enough. I don't know. I really don't. Because you're going to 12-1 Big 12 before you have a heart attack. 12-1, you would have a 12-1 Big 12 champion, whether it's West Virginia, Oklahoma, or Texas, that would have, whichever team that is, would have beaten the other two. So you'd have Texas, who's already gotten through Oklahoma. They would maybe rematch them in the Big 12 title game, or they'd beat West Virginia twice. Like, among those three teams, they would have quality wins by the nature of beating the others. It doesn't matter who it is. And in the Pac-12, you'd have Washington with wins over Oregon and then Stanford and USC. I actually think Washington would probably be left out of this mix because of that loss to Auburn. It's messy and it's a crazy hypothetical, but I think among those four teams, Notre Dame, whoever the Big 12 title is, Clemson and Washington, I don't think Clemson's resume would be the best. And part of it isn't their fault. That's the thing. Like, if Clemson had hammered Texas A&M, they'd hammered Syracuse, this would be a different story. But based on what we've seen on the field so far this season, against those middle-of-the-road teams, they've struggled. And Alabama didn't struggle against A&M. And Ohio State hasn't had a close call against a middle of the road team. And it's just going to be interesting when it comes, push comes to shove. Because I know we see that zero in the loss column and we want to say that that's the end all be all. But I began this by saying, I think Clemson would get in. I think the committee would put in an undefeated team.
He's defending himself now.
No, well, I just want to say, I think Clemson would get in. But I don't know that they should if that were to be the case.
Okay, question for you, though. Who, let's say Georgia goes undefeated and beats Alabama.
Right.
With the exception of Alabama, what's their biggest win?
Well, they've got a tough road right here in the next 4 weeks.
Who?
So they play, this week they have LSU.
Who has a loss.
And honestly, LSU will probably end up around 8-4. Because they have Georgia, they have Alabama. Those are two losses right there.
That win looks not as great.
Okay.
Next.
Then Florida. Florida just
Florida's on
beat
the rise.
LSU.
Florida is not. I don't think Florida has the resume either.
There's a chance Florida could end up 10-2 because they lose to Georgia, which would be their second loss. They already lost to Kentucky a few weeks ago. Not sure there's another loss on that schedule. Now, I think if we're being real with ourselves, Florida's probably going to drop a game in an upset later this season. They're going to lose to somebody that they shouldn't. But even then, Florida 9-3, still a pretty good win.
Well, I will say, I don't know if it's me getting older or just me coming to terms with Clemson may not be the best team in the whole entire world all the time, and that's okay. But I have been a little worried that our strength of schedule is not going to get us in, regardless of if we go undefeated or not. Mm-hmm. The ACC is not where it needs to be. I don't know what has happened to some teams, especially in the Coastal. And you can even pitch the Atlantic, too, that they're not up to par and not where they need to be and not beating the teams that they need to beat to be a high conference. I also have looked at the fact that we have the 29th highest strength of schedule. So that beats Ohio State, that beats Bama, that beats Penn State, that beats Oklahoma, that beats Michigan, that beats Florida, that beats Wisconsin. So if we do go undefeated and we win the ACC, I do think, playoff committee, if you're listening, we would like to be in.
I saw that stat, too. I would love to know how that was calculated because, I mean, you look at who Clemson has played. I mean, there's not a ranked team. I guess Texas A&M just squeaks back into the top 25 this week. And to be fair, that win looks a little better now that Texas A&M did beat Kentucky. Kentucky's having a great year.
And it was game day and at home and all this hype and everything else.
Okay.
And it was what, the second week? First week? What was it?
It was week two or three. Yeah, that's great. All right. Texas A&M, they were super excited to play. You know who else was excited to play a night game at home? Virginia Tech. They lost by 22 to Notre Dame.
I
think we overrate that a little bit. All right. It was a hostile environment. That's fine. Also, if Kelly Bryant had played that whole game, probably wouldn't have been as close, but that's neither here nor there at this point. I think that.
Too soon.
I think that Clemson's biggest problem at this point is its perceived lack of a strong schedule.
I agree.
And that's that. They can't control that. But what they can control is how they look against that schedule. And I've said this many times before. You can't control who you play, but you can control how you play. And Clemson, against Syracuse and against A&M, allowed average football teams, you call Texas A&M above average, fine, all right, to hang around in games that you need to put them away.
Absolutely.
If you want to prove yourself as a national championship contender, you got to put those teams away.
Well, I think
that's what Alabama does. That's what Ohio State
does.
That's what those teams do. Clemson hasn't been able to do that. And how am I supposed to look at a team like Georgia or look at a team like whoever? If there's a 12-1 Big 12 champ, that's the thing. I think a 12-1 Big 12 champion would have a much stronger resume than Clemson, unless this is what Clemson needs. They are the biggest Miami fans right now. They need Miami to keep winning, okay? Because Miami has been on shaky ground all year long, if you ask me. They should have lost to Florida State a week ago. We'll also get to that later. But they need to have that big marquee win that they can throw up at that committee and say, look, we beat this top 15 team or we beat this top 10 team. They have to have that, I think, to legitimize their resume. I mean, that's if you remember Iowa back in, I want to say it was 2015, they went undefeated in the regular season. They were 12-0, and then in the Big Ten championship game, they played Michigan State, and everybody kind of questioned Iowa because they were undefeated, but they hadn't really beaten anybody. I think they had beaten one ranked team all year long, and that's when I think we made – we were getting real in a dangerous territory of just giving a team a playoff spot because they won every game.
Yeah.
But all schedules are not created equal. All conferences are not created equal. And Iowa doesn't have the pedigree of Clemson, so – it's an interesting dynamic there where Clemson's made the playoff for three straight years and they have the history that maybe gives them a little bit of an advantage in the eyes of the committee. But Iowa lost that Big Ten championship game, ended up going to the Rose Bowl, got blown out. Another example, Florida State back in 2014, the year after they won the national championship. They were skating by, had a comeback win against Louisville on a Thursday night. They skirted by against a couple other teams in a close game. That was Jameis Winston's sophomore year. I said all year long, we're giving Florida State too much credit for what they did a year ago. We were giving Florida State credit for winning the national title the year before, when if you watched the 2014 Florida State team, they were barely beating average teams. And I said, why are we all just assuming Florida State belongs in the top four? I can see the smoke billowing out of your ears right now.
No, it's not.
But we're
I actually surprisingly agree with you.
But we use the history of these teams, I think, and it influences our opinion of them way too much.
Well, and I think the thing that everybody was so excited after the Syracuse win because, oh, it's just a win and we'll take a win. No, if you're a true Clemson fan and you want to make it to the national championship or even in the playoffs, a win against Syracuse that you scrape by the skin of your teeth and stresses everybody out is not a good showing to the playoff committee when Alabama is blowing people out 68-0. I mean, it's just not – let's not just get wins to get wins. Let's kill people on the football field.
Mm-hmm. That's what they have to do. That because, like I said, you cannot control who you play, but you can control how you play. And that matters in a system where you have five power conferences, mm-hmm. you have four playoff spots. Not every conference champion is going to get in. That's just pure math. I'm not a math major, but I can add up to four, and I know that five is more than four. You have to be able to impress every time out.
And I will say, the playoff committee a lot of times, too, is a simple eye test. Who looks the best? Who has the mm-hmm. higher points? Who dominated this team versus who barely scraped by with this team? I mean, it is all about how glitz and glam you look going into the playoffs.
Exactly. And let's just throw out this nightmare, which for this scenario that I threw out isn't going to happen because every year we think everybody's going 13-0. They never do. So this is more just an exercise and having some fun.
Just trying to get me riled up.
Let's just say that Alabama is 12-1 and they are being compared among some other teams with a 13-0 Clemson. That Texas A&M game, all of a sudden, Alabama beat them by 22, Clemson beat them by 2. Those kind of things will matter.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
That's why you have to go out and dominate when you're supposed to dominate. And Clemson was a 14-point favorite against A&M. They were over a 25.5-point favorite against Syracuse, and they barely got by. They have time to change the narrative. They got mm-hmm. 6 games to do it. Trevor Lawrence is going to only get better, you would assume. So that if that offense continues to kind of get into a groove, the defense improves as well. I think that's the sneaky secret about this team, is the defense has actually been a big problem in those close games. A&M giving up 400 passing yards, and of course Syracuse. They
the defense
up a lot
shut
of big
Wake Forest
well.
Down last week.
They did.
No, I'm just saying that was when we dominated. Is when they showed up and showed
Correct.
Their potential.
Correct.
And allowed no passing yards, no rushing yards. So.
And that was impressive too, because in the Syracuse game and the A&M game, it was the secondary, it was the passing attack of those two teams that kept them in the game.
Yep.
And they blew out Georgia Tech, but Georgia Tech can't throw the ball.
No, it's the Wildcat over and over again.
Exactly. So you watch them go against Wake, who actually has a passing attack. I thought Wake was going to give them a little bit of a game, at least keep it within 20. And
I thought Wake Forest was a trap, not going
to
lie.
It felt like it. Yep. So credit to Clemson for doing that. They've got 6 weeks to change the narrative. But I think the biggest thing for Clemson is they need Miami to keep winning, or, hey, Virginia Tech, win out. Like, one of those two teams out of the Coastal needs to be a 10-win team, I think, to give Clemson that quality win.
Or just beat everybody 60 points and
call
it a day.
Or do that and stop coming back from behind at home against Syracuse. That would help a lot as well. So, nightmare scenario. It's a lot of fun to talk about it. Reality is, half these teams are going to lose in the next 2 weeks. It doesn't matter. Clemson will go undefeated and they'll get in no matter what. But it is fun to think about, because I think sometimes we get in our heads that this team has made the playoff last year, the last 3 years. They don't have a loss, and that automatically means that they belong, when you got to watch the teams play and you got to evaluate them fairly. That's how I feel. But we do have to talk about another team in the conference that has an emotional connection to one of us, and that's going to be Virginia Tech. So next up, we'll talk about the Hokies and their expected loss
at home, if not a devastating one, to Notre Dame in Blacksburg. All right, guys, welcome back. We're going to talk about Virginia Tech and Notre Dame now. College football country, I'm Josh Barcell. Alex Weaver joining me as well. And we just finished up talking about Clemson. Now it's time to talk about the
Hokies.
Broke
my heart. Now it's time to break your heart.
Exactly. It's just a pool of misery here. We're going to drown in a sea of tears together because, well, at least your team's winning. So we can't get your heart's not that broken. All right. You could be losing by 22 at home to Notre Dame. It could be a lot worse. But, look, I'll say this. Virginia Tech, I expected them to lose that game last week.
I didn't.
Really?
I didn't.
Well, you're more optimistic than I am.
I would have had my maroon and orange on if I owned anything Virginia Tech. It would have been on because not only was I cheering for you guys, I expected Rowdy to be a little rowdier.
Well, so I'm glad you said that because this is where I want to start with Virginia Tech. And this is something I said a week ago, a little bit with Kyle Bailey, and now I can really go all in because of what happened on Saturday. At some point, Lane Stadium has to become more than just a Metallica song and losing to ranked teams. Virginia Tech now, for the last 10 years, since 2009, is winless against ranked teams at home. And I know that that coincides with more or less the downturn of the program at the end of the Frank Beamer era, and it's not necessarily an indictment on the environment at Lane Stadium because the environment is great. All right, the pregame atmosphere is always electric, and you can rank it right up there with the best of college football. And I'll get to where I would put that atmosphere in a second. But I think Virginia Tech, and whether it's on social media or through recruiting or even on television, they're selling – I think almost the biggest selling point about Virginia Tech right now has nothing to do with the product on the field. Like
yeah,
you hear
I
about
agree.
Virginia Tech and you hear about Enter Sandman.
Metallica entrance and Rub the Rock and walk through the small tunnel that gets you all hyped up. I come from Clemson, also has a great entrance. Watching yep. Enter Sandman and Virginia Tech every single time gives me goosebumps. Every time.
And that's great. Like, that is awesome. Fans should continue to show up, keep jumping. But at some point, you got to win the games. You got to live up to the hype. You have to match the electricity of the pregame atmosphere during the game itself. And this is a young Virginia Tech team. Again, I didn't expect them to win. I'm not coming in here and saying this to trash the team that they have this season because this is a rebuilding year for Virginia Tech. 75% of the team sophomores are younger. Next year is the bigger litmus test for Justin Fuente. And to kind of go down that road, when you're talking about the Hokies, the Old Dominion loss stings so much because, I mean, obviously it's an embarrassing loss to a team that's now 1-5. They lost the last 2 weeks, East Carolina and somebody else who's irrelevant. I don't even remember. They just, FAU, I think, beat them by 20. So, yes, that loss stings. But that notwithstanding, this team is so young. And in year three is always an interesting year for coaches, and this is Justin Fuente's third year at Virginia Tech. Now, if you remember Dabo Swinney's third year at Clemson, he was starting to feel some pressure. They had made an ACC title game, just like Justin Fuente has done, but the program hadn't really turned a corner, and people were starting to whisper about Dabo Swinney. So it can happen in the third year at a lot of places. Jim Harbaugh in his third year at Michigan, which was last season, they kind of hit a wall, spun their wheels a little bit in Ann Arbor, and it didn't quite they didn't quite live up to the expectation, and fans started to get a little restless. You're starting to hear those rumblings just a little bit around Blacksburg, the restlessness about, well, when is this team going to take that next step? That is not what I'm saying. I actually have a long-term view in mind with Virginia Tech, and I'm not saying because they lost the other night that all of a sudden this is an indictment on Justin Fuente and the job he's done at Virginia Tech. Year three is weird because usually there's a lot of roster overhaul when you come in. You're taking a job. You're going to recruit your guys. When you're in year three, keep this in mind. Your first year, you're basically playing with entirely
another
a roster of the
team.
Other coaches. Entirely.
Yeah.
Even the handful of recruits that you brought in yourself probably aren't contributing. That's exactly what happened at Virginia Tech. He won with a lot of older guys, Beamer's guys. Year two, you're still mostly playing with the other coaches' guys. You at least have a first full year of recruiting, but those guys are all true freshmen. You're not going to have very many, if any, impact players in year two that were your guys. Now you get to year three, maybe you do have a lot of guys who are your recruits, your guys, but their sophomores are younger. I mean, they're in their second year on campus or their first. So this is exactly what's taking place with Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. Is he's got his guys in the program, but they're all kids. They're all babies. I mean, they're babies that were playing against Notre Dame on Saturday night. And to be honest, they looked like it.
Yeah.
They stood toe-to-toe with Notre Dame for a half. And if it weren't for a handful of very, very close call mental mistakes, they're right in that game. So this is not to take away from the job that Justin Fuente has done and what the future holds for Virginia Tech, because I think they are right there. I think they're very close to turning a corner where they're not going to be Clemson. They're not going to make three straight playoffs, but they're certainly going to be the most dominant team in the Coastal along with Miami. And it's just frustrating to see people who hold Fuente accountable for this when he's building the program the right way.
Well, I don't think that's very fair either, because I think you don't build the pyramids in a day, people. I mean, it takes time to build a program and get a program to the standard that a Virginia Tech expects. I also think, and it's like you said earlier, everybody's young. You were working with a transfer quarterback who looked scared to death.
Right.
Walking out of the tunnel. It was an electric atmosphere, too, and I think it was just a lot of pressure for young guys that they're not ready for.
Yeah, and I thought Ryan Willis actually handled himself fairly well.
I do, too.
The big error, of course, he fumbled late in the first half that led to the Notre Dame touchdown. That was a big change in momentum. Yeah. Even though the Hokies did respond, didn't score right before the half. There were two plays in my mind that stood out in that game as game changers. Maybe three. The fumble that I just mentioned, mm-hmm. the scoop and score for Notre Dame. The penalty on the trick play where they threw the double pass that was a touchdown gets called back. So those are two plays right there. All of a sudden, if you can get take those two off the board, and then this isn't really a play in itself, but getting shut out on the goal line, you had first and goal at the one. It turned into a field goal. They were down 10-6, and instead of getting a touchdown, it turned out to be a field goal 10-9. You're all of a sudden talking about a 21-10 game at halftime instead of trailing 17-16. It's a much different game. But you know what? That's football. It happens. You're going to make mistakes. You can point out plenty of mistakes Notre Dame made as well.
That's how you can tell it's a young team, too. I mean,
exactly.
Mistakes are going to happen.
Exactly. You saw the talent. You saw the flashes. You've seen the flashes throughout the season. But the youth, that is where those mistakes can come. Those little teeny penalties, those fumbles, those mental errors, that's what brought this team down on Saturday night. Justin Fuente is building that team, though, for the long haul, and they're going to be just fine. But I do go back to this thing. It's just getting a little tired. I, as a fan, I've been in Lane Stadium for 20 years of my life, and I love the atmosphere. It's exciting. Inner Sandman is great. But I think they need to pump the brakes on selling that as much as they are because it's only leading to letdown. It's only leading to letdown that you keep calling yourself the most intimidating venue in college football and the greatest entrance in all of college football. If you want to really have that atmosphere and treat yourself like one of the toughest places to play in college football, you got to start winning those games, which is what Clemson does now. I mean, if you think about it, 10 years ago, Clemson, look, they've been rubbing Howard's rock forever, okay? But it wasn't until 10 years ago where they truly became, in my mind, a truly tough place to play. There's a difference between a great tradition and a great home field advantage. You know, right now I think Virginia Tech is more like Colorado than they are like Clemson. Okay, Colorado has a great tradition. They run Ralphie out of the tunnel. He runs around the field. It's a great tradition pregame. Everybody gets excited. Nobody's scared to go play at Colorado. It's a cool college tradition. It's fun to see. It should be on your college bucket list, all right? But at some point you got to go out on the field and the team's got to do the work. Not the fans, not the mascot, okay? Not the music. And I think that's the thing for Virginia Tech that's starting to get a little frustrating. It's starting to get a little old that you are selling being a tough place to play when in reality you have a really cool pregame tradition because clearly teams aren't afraid to go in there anymore. Notre Dame wasn't scared. They didn't flinch. They didn't make those same mental mistakes that they made a year ago on the road against Miami, for instance. They learned their lesson last year when they got blown out and they came out and responded. So that's the thing with me is I think that you're becoming more of a tradition rather than actually an intimidating place to play. A cool tradition, not a great home field advantage.
Well, I think the thing, too, that frustrated me about watching the Virginia Tech game is that you had a running back who did the same play over and over again, and for whatever reason, Virginia Tech's defense couldn't figure it out.
I know.
And he ran train.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Dexter Williams, and finally busted loose, got the 97-yard touchdown that I mean, that was bound to happen at some point. And that's – it was a – Caleb Farley out of position on that play, lets it happen. Another example of a young defense, plenty of talent, but young defense is going to make those mistakes. And those – you know, a little mistake here, a little mistake there, a little mistake here. Those add up over time. And those are what make the difference in a game. You go from a team in Virginia Tech that probably should have – that game should have been close at the end. I think Notre Dame's a better team. I mean, Notre Dame is clearly more talented, more experienced. But Virginia Tech had chances, and they blew them.
Did Old Dominion beat – was it in the air or on the ground? What was their
– It was a little bit of everything, but it was really in the air. I mean, they threw up over 400 yards. Well. But
it's just a total defense.
It was a lot of Old Dominion throwing the ball vertically down the field, testing that young secondary, and then late in the game, I think Virginia Tech quit. And when they're
which I kind of think they did with Notre Dame too.
Probably late in the game they did. Late in the game, I mean Notre Dame really once they got out ahead 38-16, it was over, and you saw a young team kind of tuck their tails and run. That's part of the learning experience of being a young football team. That's part of the growth process. Mm-hmm. That's part of the development. And, you know, a lot of Virginia Tech fans listen to this show, and I don't know if you're the ones listening. I don't know if you're the ones who are calling for Justin Fuente or Brad Cornelison or whatever. You guys need to really relax and take a step back and understand where this program is. You know, Alabama can hire a guy like Nick Saban and win in his second year. Florida can handle, you know, an Urban Meyer, hire a guy like Urban Meyer and win in its second year. Virginia Tech does not have the infrastructure, okay, to just snap your fingers and start winning at an elite level within two or three seasons. It takes a while. And I think people underestimated, too, where the program was when Beamer left. Because the last two or three years of Beamer's career, recruiting took a serious turn for the worse. And you're seeing that play out right now where you've got these older guys. Okay, that recruiting class in 2015, they had Trevon Hill, who was just kicked off the team 2 weeks ago, defensive end.
Academic, right?
No. Well, so Adonis Alexander was academic. He was the cornerback who ended up being drafted in the supplemental draft for the Redskins. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he was gone, same recruiting class. Yeah. Mook Reynolds, same recruiting class, three-year mm-hmm. starter at Whip linebacker. He's gone. So you had three defensive starters in that class that get kicked out. I don't want to get into any sort of character accusations about those guys, but I'm just saying, connect the dots. Three guys in the same class, all kicked out before their careers are over. I think you can say that Frank Beamer lost his touch a little bit with the types of guys that he was recruiting at the end of his career, and a lot of that has to do with some of the guys that were on his staff handling those decisions, and I'll kind of leave it at that. But Justin Fuente had to come in and inherit something that was not the well-oiled machine that Virginia Tech had become from 2001 to 2011. All right, that team was one of the top 10 programs in college football. It was so far removed from that from the time Fuente got there that he had to build it back up. And it's just they're essentially playing with a JV team right now. That's what's happening. They're playing with a lot of freshmen and sophomores. Ryan Willis starting in is just his second game.
Yep.
I mean, you expect second game at Virginia Tech. Of course, he started at Kansas. Doesn't really count as college football, but whatever. That's a process. That takes time. And Fuente has built this program the exact right way. He's gotten rid of talented players who might have been problems in the locker room, who might have not been bought in to what Virginia Tech should be about. And fans who want to look and see just the product on the field and see the Trevon Hills, the Mook Reynolds, the Adonis Alexander, the talented players, if those guys are negatives off the field to the point where they're taking away from your overall mission, get rid of them. A lot of fans don't understand that. They think this is a video game. They think it's Madden, and you just want to have the highest-rated players out there at all time. There's a lot more that goes into this thing than just what you do for 60 minutes on Saturday.
Yeah, when you have character issues and when you have academic issues and you have guys that are not showing up to practice on time and not being the face of a program that you need them to be, especially older guys, there comes a point in time where a coach needs to step in. And at the end of the day, it's not about winning a football game. It's about building a program. And you're not going to build a program on a shaky, non-rocky foundation.
And that's something that Nick Saban has done. That's something that Dabo Swinney has done. A lot of successful coaches.
I mean,
it takes time to establish a culture. Because once you have a culture and a set of expectations and a standard set for your program, that's when success will come. Even if it means taking the pain, the hit in the short term, you're looking for the long-term view. And Justin Fuente is doing that the exact right way. It really gets under my skin, the people who see a guy like Trevon Hill kicked off or a young team get, you know, beat by 20 at home, because it's not about this moment right here. It's about what's best for Virginia Tech over the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I'll take a loss if you're a Virginia Tech fan. You should take a loss on Saturday night if it means that it's a growth and a learning experience for a team that really is set up to succeed in 2019 and 2020 and beyond. And now, as I do every week, I bring on Rossi Three Stacks for our weekly gambling segment. I aim to tease Rossi. We skipped last week. Would you like to apologize to the listeners?
I would not. No, it was for a worthy cause. It was for Rod's last ride. We were sending me off into marriage the right way, the way only Myrtle Beach can. So I think it was probably for the best for my own sake personally, and really for everybody's sake, that we did not attempt a podcast Thursday night.
You know, I brought the equipment, and
I know you did.
I was ready, and then it quickly devolved into it became very clear that the podcast wasn't going to happen. So I know the people were disappointed. I know they were let down. The good news is that we didn't buy the boat, but we certainly used a boat.
We bought tickets to a boat.
Yes.
On which we played cards for money.
We did. And one of us won, and mm-hmm. One of us lost.
Yes.
Would you like to tell the people who was who? Whom's?
Never heard of her. It's tough to say. I do not recall. Please contact my associates for any questions regarding winnings and losing. No, so fun fact about casino cruises. Well, they are a lot of fun. However, when you're in a casino, when you're not trapped on a boat, once you get up, you can kind of walk away from the table and go do other stuff. Like, I don't know, go to a bar somewhere, go back to your room, whatever it were.
Right.
When you're on a boat, you're kind of just stuck on the boat.
Yep.
So I went up, I don't know, 100, 150 bucks, nothing major, but like went up a little bit. Normally, being the somewhat conservative gambler I am, I probably would have just walked away and gone done something else. But since we were there, I just went ahead and kept gambling, and I lost it all. The cards took a hard turn. One of those nights where you get like 20 or even 21 on like two or three straight hands and lose all of them because the dealer hits blackjack or something. So I fell victim to one of those streaks. You, Stanley, of course, were the big winner.
I was not gonna rub it in your face or anything, but I won more than $100 more than you. So.
You did.
Like I said, not the type of guy to rub it in your face.
No, you're not. You've never proven to be one of those guys.
No.
But, you know, hey, I appreciate you being there to support me on that voyage.
You know,
it was pretty sweet. If you haven't been, if you are in the general North South Carolina area and can make it down to, what is it, Little River, South Carolina, it actually, I would say, is a worthwhile trip. Especially, we went at the perfect time of year where it was like a really nice sunset behind us. You kind of got like a cool river cruise, and then you start playing cards, and it's everything you would expect a casino cruise out of Myrtle Beach to be.
Yep, we got exactly what we bargained for.
Yes,
and it lived up to the expectation. It was great, beautiful sunset as we're pulling away.
Yep.
That was criminally underrated part of the night, but the gambling was great as well. I seem to remember you, like you said, you were up and then you kept gambling, but you were peer pressured into it. I got to say, our friends made you get back onto the table.
Friends, what? Not friends, you.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. No, it was not
you
just
specifically
me.
Specifically, we're like, come on, man, you're here. It's your bachelor party.
I feel like I had backup.
Maybe. I'm sure there were other people echoing that. But yes, I was done. I was going to just go like get some food, get a couple drinks, and hang on the deck of the boat for a while. And you were like, no, dude, get back on there. And
see,
that is when I promptly lost another like $150.
This is the difference. So you and I, oftentimes we end up, I mean, this time I won money, you lost. But most of the time when we've played a lot of blackjack together, we'll end up probably both down a little bit at the end of the night, because that's what happens. But we do it in very different ways.
Wildly different ways.
We have very different approaches to how to play blackjack.
I'm Iowa. I never get up too much or too little. You are like Texas Tech or someone,
yes,
just airing it out. And sometimes you get blown out, and sometimes you score 70 points.
Oh, yeah. Yep, for sure. So there's, you know, every now and then I did it more so last week than I have in a while, where, you know, you're throwing down $10, $20 bets, whatever, and then, you know, you just get the itch for a $50 bet here and there. And I actually hit on every single one of my $50 bets. So I guess, how do you put this? I probably lost 70% of the hands I played.
Right.
But I won on the big bets. Exactly.
Right, right, right.
So I took shots downfield and it connected. So that's
hey, man. It was
worked
fun.
Out for the best.
as much as we talk about gambling on here, it was fun to go actually do a little old school blackjack. We couldn't get on the craps table because the Big M VIPs had gotten those spots reserved like before we even got on the boat, which was a little annoying, but blackjack was fun.
Yep. Little tip, if you're going to go on the Big M boat, you need to become a VIP member if you want to play craps, because
or
those...
get there super early and go mark a spot like an hour before the boat takes off.
Yep, exactly. Mark your territory. All right, Ross. Well, we'll move on. We'll put the past is in the past. Bachelor party is over. We're back to college football Saturday this weekend. You always have your teasers. And hey, shout out to you, by the way, on the iTunes page for reviews on this podcast. There was somebody who left a review that said they really loved your ex-wife jokes.
Hey, thanks, man.
Yeah, so I'm telling you.
I wish I loved my ex-wife. More specifically, I wish she loved me.
Exactly. So you got that going for you. And we have that to be proud of.
Thanks, anonymous commenter. I will keep them coming.
Now let's try to pick some winners. So we'll go to your teases for the week. How many you have right now? I know you got your actual teaser every week, and then you got your just for fun teasers. So how many are we putting in this week?
Well, we got a slightly different theme this week.
Ooh.
Since we are about a month away, maybe a little less than a month away from college basketball season starting, and you know the love is in the air for me in that regard. In advance of the ACC Big Ten Challenge, we're going to do a little ACC Big Ten Challenge of our own with our teaser this week. So I've got three ACC games, three Big Ten games for you.
Nice. All right. Well, why don't we start with – do you want to start with the Big Ten?
Oh.
Yeah, sure. little twist. Little twist there.
Why not?
Don't want to throw you off too much.
So we're going to start with Penn State, minus 13.5. We're going to tease them to minus 6.5 at home against Michigan State.
Yeah, buddy.
So Penn State's had a couple weeks to lick their wounds after the huge meltdown against Ohio State. Old Jimmy Franklin has had a couple weeks to turn them into the elite program that he wants them to be. So I think they come out and get back on track here. Michigan State, they were ranked, I guess, either last week or a couple weeks ago. They sneakily have not really beat anybody good this year. Lost to Northwestern last week by 10. I think Michigan State might not be all that good. Love Penn State to bounce back here and win by a touchdown or more.
Yeah, in Happy Valley. And the thing about Penn State is they have to win thoroughly convincingly the rest of the way if they want to have even a shot at maybe being that at-large team in the playoff. I mean, a lot of stuff has to shake out, and right now they're certainly on the outside looking in. But you know, let's say some of those undefeated teams lose a game or two. I mean, you remember last year Alabama gets in as a one loss at large, and of course they're Alabama. They're probably going to get in because they're Alabama, but they were a one loss at large team, didn't play for their conference championship, but got in because they had, at least what the committee said, was a pretty good resume in the regular season. If Penn State you know, wins out, I know they lost by one at home to Ohio State, but you know they could have wins over Michigan and Wisconsin late in the season. I mean, there's still something to play for if you're James Franklin. And yeah, Michigan State, I don't know what happened, because they were supposed to be in that class with Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan, and they just haven't. I mean, they barely beat Central Michigan. They only beat Indiana by 14 on the road. And then losses to Arizona State, Northwestern. I mean, they haven't played well in any game. This isn't like a team that just has had a couple stinkers. Like, they just flat out haven't played good football yet in five games. So I like Penn State to cover that spread outright as a 13.5-point favorite.
I'm going to bet that one also. Yeah. I think they win by a couple touchdowns.
But I do like that as a teaser. So we'll go with Penn State there. Two more in the Big Ten. Who else you got?
Well, you know we're going with Iowa. So Iowa's minus 5 against or at Indiana every week. Of course, they've let me down once, but that, you know, they won't do it again. So Iowa minus 5. We're going to tease them to plus 2 at Indiana. That's basically really all it is. They already let me down once, and I don't think they'll do it twice. But no, this actually is a solid Iowa team. The little bit I have followed them, per usual in Iowa fashion, they're going to find a way to grind out a win. And at plus 2, that's all I'm asking them to do. Indiana actually is decent. The more UVA keeps winning games, the more that win looks decent for them, and they've been okay. But I think this is the Rossi three sec. Will Iowa win this game? Yes. I'm not even by the time I've teased it to plus 2. I'm not worried about the number. I just think they will win.
Yeah, and this is, you know, Indiana's kind of a funny one, because it seems like they always give Ohio State a tough time. They've come close against Michigan in the past.
Yeah,
they're that team. They're the Syracuse of the Big Ten.
That's a very good comparison.
They're the team that they get up for the big games, and, you know, on national television, you watch them, you're like, oh, hey, you know, Indiana looks like they're turning the corner. And then they, you know, beat Rutgers by 7. And it's like, this is – Indiana is who they are. They're a below-average team. They just happen to get up for those games, and they make you want to believe, but they're not really – they're not legit. And I would go with Iowa as well, although it is in Bloomington, and we know the house of horrors that Bloomington could be. So you don't just walk into Assembly Hall. Oh, wait, never mind. This is not November yet.
I told you, ACC Big Ten Challenge, the real thing's right around the corner.
We're getting closer. All right, so you like Iowa to catch some points in a teaser. All right, so 2 out of 3. Let's move on to the last one in the Big Ten.
All right, last one. I think you're going to disagree with me here. I'm going to call my shot there.
Are you fading Michigan? Oh,
Northwestern -4.5 to +2.5 at home against Nebraska. I say that because I know you're big on the we've buried Scott Frost too early train.
Yep.
But I do think we've got one more week of the Frost advisory.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, thanks. Nailed that one. Yeah. buddy, Roy Helu Jr. ain't walking through that door. So Nebraska's a different team with Adrian Martinez. That's his name, Adrian Martinez.
Yeah.
Did they have another quarterback?
Taylor Martinez. Yep, no relation. Really confusing.
It was one of those that when this season started, I was like, oh, sweet, this guy must be back for his 5th year.
Yep.
And they started talking about how he was a true freshman. Anyway, okay, cool.
You're not the only one that thought that. Different people.
They're different with him, no doubt. But still, the numbers on this one, the hashtag data says that it should be closer to a 10-point line. So the value here is just hard for me to ignore. Northwestern has had a couple bad losses. They've played a lot better their last 2 weeks, though. They gave Michigan all they wanted, and they beat Michigan State on the road, like I just said.
This is true.
So getting them at home, +2.5, again, you're just asking them to win the game, not even worrying about the number. I think there is value there. Thoughts?
So I'm going to stay away from it altogether. I don't really know what to expect from Nebraska. I think Nebraska could still actually get to 6 wins. This is the pivotal one for them, though, because you know, they're sitting right here at 0-5. They still have
Ohio State.
Exactly. So they still have Ohio State. That's a 6th loss. So if they lose this week, you can pretty much count out a bowl game. But if they go on the road and beat Northwestern, their next, outside of Ohio State, they play Minnesota, Bethune-Cookman, Illinois, Michigan State, Iowa. That's a very reasonable slate down the stretch.
Not Iowa. They're not going to beat Iowa. Nobody beats Iowa. That's true. Wisconsin.
That's true. But I'm just saying, I think Scott Frost is – this team's only going to get better. And Adrian Martinez was banged up for the last month. I mean, he did not play in the loss to Troy. He was a shell of himself against Michigan in a game where we bought the boat. He was still not 100% against Purdue. And then they lost to Wisconsin on the road. There's no shame in losing to a top 15 team like Wisconsin. So I think Nebraska is going to continue to get better. I don't know that they go into Evanston and win, because I agree with you. Northwestern's playing really good football right now. I'm a little nervous that we might be, I guess, overvaluing Northwestern coming off a win over Michigan State, which looks good.
Who I just said is not very good.
But it's very good.
I definitely thought about that.
Yeah.
Now, was part of my motivation in picking this game to get a third Big Ten game to complete the ACC Big Ten Challenge?
Maybe. Okay.
However, I still think the logic checks out.
just take that for what it is. All right. So Penn State, Northwestern, and then Iowa. So you've got one East, 2 West teams in the Big Ten trifecta. All right. So there's one teaser. All right. So if we're going to do the Big Ten side of it, we move to the ACC. You've never picked an ACC game on this podcast before, so I'm really excited to get your thoughts.
First three here.
Okay. And so where do we start?
All right. We have to do it. We just have to do
the Hokies.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
how can you not?
I was texting you earlier. Tech right now is only favored by 5.5 against Carolina.
Yep.
To the point where that line is like suspiciously low. But I'm not gonna get in my head and wonder why it's so low. I know Chaz Surratt is out for the season now for the Tar Heels, and so that's at least 2 fewer pick sixes the Tech's gonna get. So
that's,
I guess that brings the line
advantage.
That brings the line down a little bit, I would imagine. But no, look, I could sit in here and try to make excuses for how North Carolina actually played really competitively against Miami for a quarter, but like I've been doing that for 2 years and they just keep losing games badly. Like the fact of the matter is until they get adequate quarterback play or decent coaching, they stink and you should bet against them basically every week. Yeah. So getting Virginia Tech in a teaser to +1.5, I really don't see how they lose this game. It's going to be probably 60 to 70% Tech fans there anyway.
Right.
So there's not even really a home field advantage at play here. Mm-hmm. Tech has a lot of North Carolina players on the roster and have made a concerted effort in recent years to, like, you know, own their state or whatever. So this is a bigger game than just a normal division game against a shitty team. Mm-hmm. Excuse my language.
It's okay.
I really think Tech wins this game probably by a lot.
I kind of tend to agree with you. Like you said, Justin Fuentes made a point to beat North Carolina into the ground at yep. every chance he's had.
Yeah, he wants to make a point to all of the recruits in Charlotte that he wants.
Right.
That, like, look, these guys suck. Come play for us instead. So, yeah, he runs up the score intentionally.
Yep, he's going to take advantage of that again. Weather's going to be beautiful. There was some thought it might rain, but now it's going to be perfect weather. And the thing about Virginia Tech is – That offense is pretty darn good right now. I mean, even against Notre Dame, mm-hmm. you talk about losing a touchdown. Granted, it's a trick play, but losing a touchdown on a very controversial penalty for an illegal lineman downfield.
Yeah.
And then fumbling away a possession late in the first half that led to that Notre Dame scoop and score. I mean, there were a couple. It was youth. It was literally youth and inexperience that cost Virginia Tech at least one touchdown in that game. And then, of course, they played really well against Duke. Ryan Willis has made that offense better, period. And they've got a great passing attack. I think North Carolina's going to have a really hard time slowing them down. They certainly aren't going to score very many points, even against a Tech defense that struggled. This is just a bad matchup, no. I think, for Carolina. I'm with you. What do you make, really quickly, as vice president of Tar Heel operations, on the on the Kelly Bryant news that he's going to visit Carolina?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, it's certainly a natural fit. Carolina does have a lot of young receivers and running backs, so he could step into a situation. They should bring back all five linemen. So in theory, he should step into at least an experienced offense
right.
that is just in need of a quarterback. Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. Last I saw, he has not announced any visits elsewhere. It's interesting because they play Clemson next year. I would have thought he would have wanted to go somewhere where that would not happen, but maybe it's the exact opposite. Maybe he wants to play them. I don't know. I don't think he ends up there. I think Carolina, at least in this game, I think you're going to see Cade Fortin, their true freshman quarterback, if not start. I think he's going to play a lot. At least mix in, yeah. I think if Fedora is smart, if he wants to save his job, he needs to play Cade Fortin, yeah. And he needs Fortin to look good. Right. Because then you can say, look, we've got something moving into next year. You know what you've got with Nathan Elliott. It's average at best.
Yeah. Oh, and my dog just made an appearance. Yeah. Boy,
agrees with me.
Yeah.
So
sure.
Yeah, that's basically my thoughts on it. I would be very surprised if Kelly Bryant actually does end up there, but it certainly is a nice boost of excitement for the Tar Heel community.
Yeah, I think so too. And I agree that he doesn't end up there. My thoughts immediately were, doesn't make a ton of sense for him. Just he's not going to play in the NFL. Go play somewhere where you can win. Go play somewhere where you can fit in immediately. I mean, Arkansas did make sense. That's not a place where he's going to win, but Chad Morris recruited
Chad
him in Clemson.
There. Yep, yep.
Yeah, so that makes sense. But honestly, I think the dark horse in this is complete speculation, but Auburn would make all the sense in the world next year when Jarrett Stidham's gone and they're going to need a quarterback. He would fit in flawlessly in that offense. He might even be better for that offense than Jarrett Stidham is now. So that's a school that I'm keeping my eye on. UCF, another one, if Mackenzie Milton decides to go pro, which is unlikely, but you never know.
Sure.
That could be an option too. So North Carolina is just kind of weird because, he'd fit in, and they certainly need him. But also, is North Carolina's ceiling, 8 wins with Kelly Bryant next year? I don't know. I mean, maybe
looked at the schedule, but no. If his goal is to go win a national championship or compete for one,
right,
then that is certainly not a good option.
Yeah, seems a little odd, but we are gonna ride the Hokies this week. I never bet on Virginia Tech, and it's really gonna tempt me this week. I just that line seems just absurdly low.
No, it's suspiciously low.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But you got two more in the ACC. Where are you going next?
Yep, Duke +2.5. We're gonna tease them to +9.5 at Georgia Tech.
Okay,
so Duke's coming off a bye after losing to Tech. Duke is just, they're a well coached team. And so I love them coming off a bye. No idea if the statistics back that up or not, but the logic checks out in my mind at least.
Okay.
Getting close to 10 points. At the beginning of this year, I didn't think Georgia Tech was very good. They beat the doors off of Louisville last week and stunted all over town about it. Louisville stinks. So this is going to be a very slow game, or certainly a game that will go quickly because both teams are just going to run the ball and keep it on the ground a lot. So I don't think there will be all that many points. So I think 9.5 is good value in that regard. I actually think Duke could and should win this game outright. I think Duke could win this game by like a field goal or something. So getting them plus 9.5 is pretty good value.
So Duke has beat Georgia Tech 3 of the last 4 years. And mm-hmm. the one win Georgia Tech has was 2 years ago by 3. So this has always been a pretty close series. Duke has had the better of Georgia Tech in the last few years. And you talk about Duke, too. Against Virginia Tech, they were 2 plays away from making that an entirely different game. Duke, I don't know how much of that game you saw, but Duke had 2...
0 of it.
Okay, well, Duke had 2 long... Glad you did your homework. Duke had 2 long ball throws early in the game that went off receivers' fingertips that should have been touchdowns. And if Daniel Jones connects on those 2 throws, Duke is, if not ahead, certainly tied at halftime. And that mm-hmm. game is entirely different. Instead, Virginia Tech takes a commanding lead and never really looks back. But I actually thought Duke showed out pretty well in that game, proved that they belonged on the field with Virginia Tech, who's not an elite program, or elite team at least, but better than what you're going to get from Georgia Tech. So I think Duke does win it outright. Georgia Tech got a big win last week against a bad Louisville team, and they were out for blood because of some history between Paul Johnson and Brian Van Gorder. Did you see that story, by the way?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, man.
No.
So, might as well tell it really quickly. So, Georgia Tech beat Louisville 66-31 last week. Mm-hmm. And it seems kind of odd. Like, Georgia Tech hasn't been playing that great. Like, why did they all of a sudden go out and light up Louisville for 66? We know Louisville's not very good, but still. Turns out, Brian Van Gorder, who's the DC at Louisville now, was formerly the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame and actually succeeded Paul Johnson as the head coach at Georgia Southern when Paul Johnson left to go to Navy. So you following along with me here?
Yep, I'm with you.
So when Van Gorder took the head job, this is like 13 years ago, Van Gorder takes the head job, immediately trashes the triple option. And I guess like said some things to the media, like, you know, I mean, the media hotbed that Georgia Southern has, you know, the following mm-hmm. that the Eagles have.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, it makes national news. And just kidding. But he did go out and trash the option. And I guess they had a marketing campaign. I don't know if it was for ticket sales or whatever, but I guess the team slogan in that first year was "There is no option" or something like that. Yeah, it was crazy. So I guess Paul Johnson was not happy, and I guess he called up Georgia Southern and scheduled a game with them when he was at Navy. And now I'm forgetting if they actually ended up playing it. He might have actually left to go to Georgia Tech before they played that game. But this was a chance for him. I think he was eager to go out. He wanted to run the option.
Really cut the knees out from some under.
Oh, yeah, you could say that. Did you notice how many passes Georgia Tech threw on last week?
Josh, I did not.
2. They were 1 for 2. So they ran the triple option every play and put up 66 on Louisville.
So there was very much the element of Paul Johnson trying to prove to this dude that the triple option, in fact, it does work.
Yes, absolutely.
Got it.
So
I got
that. That was.
Does he have any similar vendettas against Duke's defensive coordinator, whose name I could not tell you in a million years?
Not that I know of, but I doubt that he has any problem with David Cutcliffe because nobody has a problem with David Cutcliffe.
No, he's seemingly nice guy.
So you got to factor that in.
We believe there is an option this weekend, and we believe the correct option is Duke plus 9.5.
Okay, go Blue Devils. So who's your last one?
One option. In honor of the hurricane that is currently about to knock out my power, Miami -6 retains them to +1 at UVA.
Look. Seems like an upset.
This line, that's what everybody seems to think. The line is honestly probably pretty good, -6. I think that's probably what it's going to end up being. So I do think from a actual football perspective, I do think Miami's defense is athletic enough to contain Bryce Perkins, or at least limit him more so than some of their other opponents have been able to. But mostly, it's UVA. I just choose not to believe that they're going to win. That's what it comes down to. Yeah. I very much choose to believe they're not going to beat Miami this weekend, and I have to bet on that gut feeling. You're right. I know everybody is thinking this could be an upset. Miami's maybe had some fool's gold, like I was starting to say against Carolina. Like, if Chaz Surratt doesn't just hit them in the chest with a couple passes, that game is a lot lot closer. But it's UVA, man. Did you see they had to practice indoors to prep for how nice the weather is going to be? It's going to be like this beautiful fall day in Charlottesville. Like, well, I call it a beautiful fall day, like 60s. Like a nice, like maybe I get in the evening, might be a little bit cooler than that, but like high 50s, low 60s. So Miami started practicing indoors just to simulate the cool conditions.
Oh my God.
It's going to be this beautiful fall day, and they had to go indoors to practice.
Well, I'm glad Miami's ready. Man.
So they're ready. They're ready, baby. They're ready for that nice climate-controlled 50 to 60-degree game.
Air conditioning and everything. Man, I don't know. UVA is weird because, I mean, they lost to Indiana. Then they beat Ohio, and honestly, they were blowing Ohio out, and Ohio staged a furious rally in Nashville to try and make that game. I mean, the 14 points, that game wasn't really all that close. And then they blew out Louisville, who's not good, but, I mean, for UVA to blow anyone out, that says something. And then last week they hung around. They were in the ballpark around NC State. They didn't let the Wolfpack really truly pull away. Lost 35-21. And I think NC State's every bit as good as Miami, if not better. So
we still disagree on that.
You think you're not sold on the Wolfpack?
I think they're going to end up going like 10-2 or 11-1. But I said it from the beginning. This is NC State is the 2015 North Carolina team that's going to end up with a really good record, but ultimately not be that good. And I think you're going to see that against the really good teams they play. Oh boy, power's flickering, Stan.
Oh boy,
lights are flickering.
All right, we might need to go. Well, hey.
Hurricane Mike is bearing down.
Well, I'll just get out of here and say UVA with a bye week, 2 weeks to prepare. You don't give Bronco Mendenhall 2 weeks and expect the Cavaliers to lay an egg. Just saying.
I will always expect the Cavaliers to lay an egg.
Yeah, you're
Stan,
probably right.
And I will bet my money on that until I have no money left.
You're probably right. All right, so real quick to recap the teasers. In the Big Ten, you've got Penn State,
Iowa, and Northwestern.
Yep, and in the ACC.
The ACC, Virginia Tech, Duke, and Miami.
All right, let's see if we can do it. We'll split them up. We'll do two teasers. Hopefully we hit on them all. And we'll buy at least a ticket to another boat, if not a boat.
I would love that. Yes, I think at very least we can get back on the boat.
There we go.
Yes.
All
tickets
right.
are very affordable. We'll see you at the Big N Casino.
Use promo code Rossi3Stack.
There it is. All right, Rossi. Well, always appreciate it, and we'll do it again next week.
Hey, I'm proud of you, young man.